Thank you so much for joining Dental Marketing Theory, a podcast by Gary Bird. In today's episode, Gary talks with Janet Hagerman, author and consultant. Gary and Janet talk about selling dentistry with the three E's: ethically, elegantly, and effectively, and how much of an impact a good communication strategy can have in practice growth. As always, please make sure to like, subscribe, share, and leave a comment, as all of those things really help to get the word out about Dental Marketing Theory. Hope you enjoy today's show.
All right, Janet, we are live. So good to have you today.
Great. Thank you, Gary. Thank you for the privilege. It's an honor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm excited to hear about your dental journey. How did you get into dental consulting?
Well, my earliest background is as a clinical dental hygienist. I did that for years, general practice, pedo, perio, pretty much all of it. And then I got burned out on dentistry. I moved to Hawaii, was never going to do dentistry again, and then got back reunited with dentistry. For those who, out there who may be thinking they're getting burned out, my best advice can be just stay abreast of the newest things that are coming out there and try to be involved in as many different aspects of dentistry, because mm-hmm. there's just so much out there that we can help with. But
so why Hawaii? Why did you end up in Hawaii?
True love.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. That's
awesome. And we're still married today.
That's awesome.
But that's another story. That's down the bloom path. But I got reunited with dentistry with some great mentors, and did consulting, did full practice consulting, and then hygiene specific consulting. And then I had the privilege of, I got invited to become the director of hygiene at a DSO that had over 100 practices. And that was great. I got a chance to sort of see the good, bad, and the ugly of the industry, all aspects of it. And, you know, being in a DSO is such an interesting opportunity, because it's sort of like having your own laboratory. So you get to very quickly see, you know, what works well, what doesn't work. And if it doesn't, why? You know, why does it work in some practices and not in others? So just a really good, good opportunity. And basically, you know, when you're a private clinician and you love what you do, that's great. And you have an opportunity to impact a certain number of people, whether it be your immediate team and or your family of patients. But when you work at a DSO, you have such a bigger opportunity to impact so many more people, your team, you know, whether you're 5, 10 practice DSO or 500, just, you know, you and I kind of touched on that briefly just a minute ago. You just have the opportunity to impact so many more people. You just multiply that by 5, 10, 100 practices and all those patients. So that's exciting. We know the DSO industry is burgeoning. And so I just feel like any opportunity that we have, and I think you've discovered that too in your own journey, that the DSO industry is where there is so much opportunity.
So much opportunity, yeah, and solving hard problems, right? There's a lot of opportunity, but there's also a lot of problems that haven't been solved yet, and different ways to go about that. So, where do you kind of see that heading for consulting and the services that you provide?
Well, I've sort of niched myself into the area of case acceptance because it's so needed. I used to have doctors ask me, when you come to our practice to train our team, would you please teach them how to sell dentistry? As a matter of fact, I could learn it myself. I know dentistry is coming in the front door and walking out the back door, and I don't know what to do about it. But don't, whatever you do, don't call it sell. For some reason, dentists have this issue with the word sell, which is why I wrote the book, Selling Dentistry Ethically, Elegantly, and Effectively. Mm-hmm. So, but the whole point of, we have low case acceptance. So there's a lot of patients walking around with needing care that's already been diagnosed. I mean, the ADA tells us that about 50% of the population doesn't go to the dentist regularly. So that's that percentage of the population. Yep. But then you take the other half that does go to the dentist, and we know that half of them don't get the treatment that's been recommended. So for a lot of, you know, we can go into that, a lot of clinical reasons.
So what was that number? Half of them don't buy the treatment that's recommended?
Well, we know that the surveys tell us that 30 to 50% is the average case acceptance. That's from a study from Dental Economics.
So 50 to 70% of people are walking out the door without the treatment that's needed.
That's not only needed, but that's been recommended. So we've examined
them.
That's
not the extra cosmetic stuff and those kind of things. That's just the basic dental needs that they have.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Wow. Yep.
So we have a lot
of opportunity there.
Tons of opportunity. So where are people stumbling? Why is it so bad? Why if it was any other industry, right? And they're like, 70% of the people say no. Most people, there would be people would be freaking out and there would be massive change immediately. So where is this? Why isn't that happening?
Well, many reasons. First of all, it's not always a metric that we measure, certainly in solo practices, and your DSOs, they may follow that more closely, but it doesn't always get measured. Number one. Number two, you know, these are soft skills. These are soft communication skills that nobody learns in school. I mean, we learn patient education in school, and patient education is basically telling people clinically what they need, educating. Well, if that worked, then we wouldn't have the 30 to 50% case acceptance as an average. So it's a matter of a lot of things, not learning those skills in our training. And then we have a lot of team members that don't get official training. They don't get licensed training. So, and think about this. People spend a lot of their time looking at their devices, communicating on their devices with emojis. And then we expect those same people to sit in our practice and look face to face, eye to eye with a patient and have a conversation about 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 treatment plan. It's a lot to expect from somebody that isn't used to doing that on a regular basis, let alone training.
Not only that, but they don't always understand the connection of why they should do it, right? So a lot of times people are getting explained, hey, you need this treatment done, but it doesn't hurt, right? So there's a big disconnect there. So if you're dealing with these people who, on both sides, you know, they're used to texting and emojis, to your point, how do you bridge that? What's the bridge to solve that problem?
Well, it's training. It's several things. We know from many, many, many studies that people make buying decisions based on emotion. And then they justify it with logic. Everything from healthcare to cars to clothes, whatever, you name it. So if we make decisions based on emotion, and then our patients come in and we just give them a lot of clinical reasons as to why they need this treatment, we're not really appealing to their emotions. So I kind of call it selling from the heart. We've got to be in relationship with our patients, and we need to understand what their values are. So I have a process of teaching people how to ask good open-ended values questions, because here's the thing, Gary. I can take two patients that both need a crown on the exact same tooth in the exact same quadrant for the exact same reason, and based on their value, whether they're cosmetically oriented, whether they're fear or pain oriented, whatever their value are, I'm going to present that very differently to those two patients. Mm-hmm. So how does a clinician learn that? And it's through, you know, there's that old saying, if you want to sell, ask, don't tell. And I'm afraid with our patient education, that's what we're doing. We're telling, we're dumping a lot of information on our patients when they're not ready to hear it yet. I'm not saying it doesn't have any value. It does.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that it needs to come at the right time. You know, good education is not the filling of a bucket. And that's what we do. We fill our patient's bucket till it's overflowing. And then if we get that deer in the headlight look like they don't quite get it, we fill it some more and we give them some more information until they're completely and overwhelmed. When what we need to do is ask good questions and then sit back and listen and learn how to respond. So that's part of it when I talk about soft skills, soft communication skills. And these are 21st century skills that are across all industries. The more technology we get, the more soft skills we need. So values is huge. Mindset is huge. You touched on that earlier. Having the right mindset. So team meetings, you know, what are the core values of the practice? Do we value case acceptance? What does that mean to all of us? And then everybody on the team having the same mindset and also using similar verbiage, scripts, if you will. I know some people don't like the word scripts, but
yeah. A system, a checklist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are some of the things that help.
Can pretty much anybody learn how to do this, or do you have to have a specific kind of person that you'd like to work with to learn how to do this?
I'm so glad that's a great, great question, because I have a whole section in my book where I talk about introverted leadership. There's been a lot of people that have studied introvert personalities recently. And no, the things that I teach are easy communication skills, extrovert, introvert. It doesn't make any difference because let's face it, our patients are extroverts and introverts.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So if anything, one of the things we learn is how do you sort of match your demeanor with the person sitting in your chair. So I have a tendency to have more of an overt personality. So if someone's in my chair, or if I have a client or a patient that's very shy and retiring, I'm going to be aware of that. And I'll find out about that too by asking good values questions and tone myself down on purpose. So we need to learn to be focused in our communication rather than casual conversation, chit chat, which is great because we're getting in relationship. But as the leader, as the clinician, we need to get very focused in our communication and learn to use their answers, their ideas, their values in terms of how does that apply to the treatment that I know as a clinician that they need.
You can teach this to most people then. Is that correct?
Oh, the answer to your question is anybody who's willing to learn. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
Anybody who says, you know what, I'm hurting. My case acceptance isn't what it should be. And I want my team to get better at this. And my team wants it too. So anybody who's coachable, who's willing to just be open-minded and learn some new ways of doing things and trying new ways of doing things.
That's great. I love that. And that's exciting because you can take and learn it. It's a skill that you're learning. You don't have to be this high powered salesperson. And I think sometimes people think that, right? Like you got to bring in this, like some over the top salesperson that sells yachts for a living to then be able to come in and sell dentistry. So I'm glad to hear that that's not the case, because I don't think that fits well. And I think that's some of the negative imagery that people have around this particular topic. Now, if I have 10 practices, 20 practices, and I have a team and you know, we're not selling dentistry the way that we want, and I bring somebody like you in to help learn these soft skills and then create a system or scripting or checklist for them to be able to work through, what kind of results do they see from that? What kind of percentage-wise are you seeing from that?
Typically, double their case acceptance.
Wow. And what kind of practices are that? Is that all kinds of practices, or there's specific kinds? When you're saying double, what kind of practices are you referring
practices
to?
Practices who typically are at that 30 to 40% range. But I've worked with specialty. I've worked with oral surgeons, periodontists, and general practices.
Got it. Okay. Wow. So that's huge.
General practices are going to see the biggest jump. Your specialties, a lot of your specialty practices are already getting their patients referred to them already. Yeah. So they sort of already come pre-qualified. Like, well, I knew I needed to get my wisdom teeth out. I just had to go to an oral surgeon to get it done. Whereas it's a little harder with general practices. So it just means that the work that we do together, which is fun, by the way, and easy. It's not difficult. It's not hard. Mm-hmm. It's not pushy. It's not salesy. If anything, it's the complete opposite. So for people who are fearful of that, it's the complete opposite. That's the reason that I created this program, is for us to be able to help our patients get the treatment that they need. So they're not walking around with a disease in their mouth, which, by the way, of course, as we now know, affects the whole body, in a way that makes the clinicians feel great about what the product and the service that they have to provide in an elegant manner.
This is great because, you know, from a marketing perspective, I mean, the best thing for a marketing company is have people not accept treatment, because then you need more marketing, right? But in the big scheme of things, I really want to see our clients succeed and sell dentistry. And then what happens is you need less marketing. And so that's humongous. If you can go from 30 to 60% or 20 to 40% case acceptance, you're not going to need as many patients because you're going to be doing more work. You're going to have less openings on your schedule. So it's a great way to, without spending more money, to become more efficient on what you already have and to produce more, and everybody wins across the board. The patient wins because they're getting the treatment that they need and they desire. That's why they came into your office and it wasn't communicated to them properly. The team wins because they're hitting their marks and their bonuses and things like that. And of course, the owners win as well because more treatment's being done. So I really love that. Changing gears on you a little bit, where do you see, when you walk into a DSO, and they got, you know, 20, 30 practices, where do you see the biggest opportunity right away? Like, where's the lowest hanging fruit that you go to first?
Well, it starts with mindset. I mean, if everybody isn't on the same page, nothing's going to happen. So
that,
it starts with
where
the culture.
You're seeing the biggest, is that where you're seeing the biggest misalignment, is that you walk in and everybody's in separate camps?
Well, sometimes, and everybody's trying hard. It's not that they're not trying, or maybe they aren't trying. Maybe they're not. It's getting a feel for what is the culture of the practice and what is the culture of the company as a whole. What is the culture of the company as a whole? Do they have a culture?
Yeah.
And if they have core values, if they have a vision and a mission, is it implemented? In other words, it's really easy to say we stand for quality care. You know, you hear that all the time. Everybody says stand for quality care. Well, that's not a vision or a mission. That should be your standard.
Standard. that's like, I keep my house clean. It's like,
exactly.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then if that is your standard, are you implementing it? Because we don't often see that. You know, is it in your interview material? Is it in your material for recruiting for new people? Do you show that to your recruiting? Do people get a chance to see what your culture is just by deciding if they want to even apply for a job with your company? And then all through your training, do you really stand behind what you say your culture is? So if part of your culture is your core beliefs is, you know, we believe it's important to have high case acceptance. So like one of my core beliefs about case acceptance is that people in this country have the money. Most people in this country have the money for what they want, whether they need it or not. And I have a whole process I go through to get people to understand that. How many of your friends have stood in line at 3 o'clock in the morning, or your patients, to get the latest iPhone, not because they need it, but because the camera is just a little fancier or whatever? There are many examples of that. So we have most people in this country have the money for what they want, whether they need it or not. Our job in dentistry is to help them want what they need. Now, how do you do that? So that is a process of soft skills.
I love that. What is What do you think the most important part in the patient journey is? What do you when a patient? So the number one thing the DSO or group needs to do is they need to make sure that they have alignment, right? And so getting everybody on the same page with the culture. Then once let's say that happens, what's the most important part on the patient journey from your side?
I wish I could say it's just one thing, but that's the whole point. It's not just one thing. It is the patient journey. It is the patient experience. It's the process. So everything from, you know, when they first come in the door, how they're treated, how they're handled, everything, how the front and the back relate to each other, how they communicate mm-hmm. with each other, the handoff particularly. I spend a lot of time talking about patient handoffs. So I want that patient in that practice to feel like they're special, like they're king or queen for the day. And I've had patients say this when I went to that office. I know there were other patients there, but I just felt like I was the only one because I never felt alone or unattended. So, those handoffs, how we answer patient questions. It really is, Gary. I wish thing. I could say yeah. it's one magic bullet.
So which
but
area,
it really
which
is
areas,
the process.
Which area is the most broken, would you say, when you walk into a practice that you see over and over and over again that people just miss?
Just answering patient questions, and it's not any one particular. It's not always the front desk. It's not always the back. It's in the communication. What's most broken is that we think that patient education is the answer, that the more we talk, the more results we're going to get. What's most broken is our inability to ask good questions and then really sit quietly and listen carefully, not to be afraid of the silence as our patients are going through the thinking process of trying to answer our questions. So the value of open-ended questions is when you ask somebody, so I've just explained to you why you need a crown. Do you have any questions? No.
Yeah.
Because most people are afraid to ask questions or embarrassed to ask questions or don't know what question to ask. But if you ask an open-ended question like, what questions do you have for me? It requires a little bit of thought, and we need to give our patients time to think about their answers. So probably one of the biggest problems to your question is learning how to be comfortable with some silences and learning how to respond to patients' values.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when you travel to, if you ever travel to another country and you walk up to somebody and they don't understand the language that you're speaking, they smile really big like this and they nod their head like this, but they have no clue what you're saying. Like literally not one word. I mean, it's universal. It doesn't matter where you go or who it is or what language it is. And the same thing happens in the dental offices, right? Where the patient, you're sitting there and you're just mm-hmm. like, oh, you need a prophy or you need this and this quadrant and that. Mm-hmm. The patient has no idea what you're talking about, mm-hmm. but they sit there and they go like this, right? Because they don't want to look stupid. Mm-hmm. I want something in your book that I really liked is the three E's of selling dentistry. Could you touch on that for me?
Well, that's the title, ethically, elegantly, and effectively. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great question. I wrote the ethical part simply because I wanted to clarify when I'm talking about selling dentistry and increasing your case acceptance, I'm not talking about selling somebody, something that they don't need. I'm not talking about selling something that's not needed. So I'm not talking about overselling. I'm talking about selling dentistry that is clinically indicated. So ethically selling dentistry means we do a complete evaluation. And I found with lots of chart audits that a lot of times we say we do a comprehensive exam, we charge for a complete exam, a comprehensive exam, the D0150, but it's not being done. So the first thing about being ethical is to make sure that you do a comprehensive evaluation, if that's indeed what you're doing, not a periodic exam or a limited exam, and that it's documented. So, are we doing 6-point probing on our patients and calling it a peri evaluation?
Why do you think that's happening? Why do you think that that's being billed for and people aren't doing that?
They just get in. People get in a hurry and they forget to do what they learned in school. I mean, it happens. It happens. Yeah. An oral cancer exam, perfect example. One person in this country dies every hour from oral cancer. Man. And yet not finding it in dental practices. And there's another example. I'm speaking on a podcast next Friday that is for the oral cancer cause and how case acceptance affects that. And I've worked with some technology programs helping them teach their people how to use the technology that we have and get patients to accept it and pay for that screening technology.
Let's touch on that because that's something that I think is a really hot topic right now is AI. And I've seen some groups that are like all over it and they love it. And I've also seen doctors that are resistant to it. And I think some of that might be in the way that it's presented. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, we need to do oral cancer screenings on every patient at least once a year. The minimum is the manual evaluation where you palpate the jaws and the outside of the, yep. the head and neck exam and then the inside. So that needs to be just the basic. Now, we are fortunate to have technology now that can see what we can't see visually. So the Velscopes of the world, the oral IDs, there's different technologies. I'm not here to say I've worked with different ones. But my point is, if you have technology available, why not use it? So use something. And if you're not using the technology, at least by all means, be doing the head and neck exam. But I think we have so much technology now that can be so helpful. Yeah. So I would say use the technology.
You feel that AI can help improve case acceptance?
Oh yeah. In a lot of different ways. Yeah. They're actually now they're now starting to come up with some technology where AI actually diagnoses x-rays. Mm-hmm. So they can look at an x-ray and see, say, interproximal decay between two teeth on bite wings. It's being developed. I've talked to some people who are leading the charge on that. And I think it's fascinating because, honestly, you can ask any dentist, and certainly DSOs know that you can have five different dentists diagnose the same patient and they'll come up with five different diagnoses.
Yeah.
So to have that consistency, not just the consistency, but just a third party to be able to say to our patients, I think it just adds to the credibility. You know, we have this great new technology now and it's able to see again what we don't always see consistently. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I think some doctors look at it and think it almost undermining, right? Like it's going to take away its job. But then some, like what you just said, it's actually, it could also be a credibility thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of reading on artificial intelligence. And, you know, we have now the ability to listen in on phone calls and determine of all the phone calls come in, how many actually make an appointment and then enable the AI to have real live coaching. I don't think it's a matter of if it's going to be helpful in our industry. I just think it's a matter of how quickly are you going to want to embrace the technology so that you can have some control of it and determine how you're going to accept it and present it to your patients. I think to be intimidated by it or think that it's not be threatened by it, you're kind of missing the boat because it is charging faster and faster than we can hardly keep up with. So I think the point is for us to, particularly for DSOs, to be able to look at the new technologies and basically say, what's going to be the best and how can we have an input into developing the technologies that are going to best serve our needs. And then it's our responsibility to explain it to patients in a way that lets them know that this is going to help us do a better job. All the technology and the training and the coaching that I always do always comes back to how can you rephrase that so it makes it better for the patient? How can you say that in a different way so the patient can accept that on a higher level? So getting back to your three E's, ethically, we want to make sure that whatever we recommend is clinically diagnosed and you can support it to a board or any place else. Here's the x-rays, here's what my findings, and here's what we recommended. So that should match the treatment plan. And then effectively, I put that in because people keep talking about patient education. Patient education, we can educate all day long. However, if the patient doesn't say yes, have we been successful? I would argue, no, we haven't. So selling dentistry ethically, elegantly, and effectively means the patient said yes to treatment. They actually scheduled the appointment. They came to the appointment. They got the treatment and they paid for the treatment. So that's when you know you have complete buy-in from the patient. And then elegantly, I added that from some mentorship that I got as I was writing this book. And I just put that in because I want people to understand that this method is elegant. I don't want them to feel uncomfortable, pushy, salesy, hardcore. I want them to feel really great about the wonderful service they provide in a very elegant manner. So the patients receive it elegantly as well. So those are the three E's.
That's great. So tell me a little bit about your, I know you're kind of famous for your Bloom philosophy.
Well, my other love is floral design, Japanese floral design to be specific, Ikebana. And it's very nature related. I just see a lot of metaphors in nature and in life in general. So I just wrote this little book of Bloom. It's Nature's Five Steps to Cultivate the Power of Your Potential. And each letter stands for something that I think can be helpful in cultivating our own personal power. So the B stands for begin. So we all have ideas all the time. And so often we procrastinate, we put them off, we stuff them back because we think, well, maybe they're not so good or it's too hard to do. So I would invite people to be proud of the ideas that they have because we all have unique ideas. Your ideas are counting on you and waiting on you to share them. So in a practice and a DSO, just think of all the ideas that you have compounded when people start being in a place where they feel safe to share their special ideas. The L stands for leverage. There are so many times we forget what we've already accomplished and achieved. And so in a dental practice, in a DSO, we have so many things that we can achieve that we can build on. So that's what I mean by leveraging that. Don't be afraid to think about what have we already accomplished that we can leverage, that we can scale, that we can repeat. Because as we scale, we're going to need to have systems in place. So what's worked good? And let's repeat those and create systems of those. Leverage our success. Other people, just networking in general is what that's about. Just working with other people and realizing the power of groups, which is the essence of DSOs. And then overcoming obstacles, huge. I know so much has been written about that. One of my favorite books is John Maxwell's book, Failing Forward. Engineers and people who design things will tell you that you need failures because that's how you get to that success. But it's easy to personalize those failures and, you know, lick our wounds and not move forward. So the lesson in that is just to look at what you think of as failures as constant opportunities for what went great, what didn't go so great, and what will I do differently next time as a result of this lesson. And then finally, the M stands for mentorship, mentoring others and allowing and looking for mentors for yourself. So in a DSO, that's a great thing about, you know, numbers is you have opportunities to be mentored and then to mentor others, to share your wisdom, whatever that looks like. So that's Bloom in a nutshell.
I love that. That is a really great breakdown. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you feel that the audience should learn or know more about you?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I have a special offer for your listeners today. I created a sheet. It's called 12 Tips for Selling Dentistry, and they're just very quick snippets, and there's 12 of them. So you could do one each month. This is a whole year, even without my being there to hold your hand, a whole year that you could take one of those tips for each month as a DSO and make that a theme for the month and go with that and get a lot of value for that. My book is available on my website. It's also available on Amazon, Selling Dentistry Ethically, Elegantly, and Effectively. My website is janethagerman.com. And for those who are willing, wanting, and waiting and eager to increase their case acceptance and know that they need some help, I would be delighted to have a complimentary discovery call with them. Email me or call me. I think you've got my phone number on your chat notes.
So we're going to put all your information below wherever you're listening, whether it's on a podcast or on YouTube or social media. All the links for Janet are below. Give her a call, reach out to her, and definitely take a look at those 12 tips. I'm excited about that. That's a great resource and a tool to be able to implement. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your knowledge and just everything that you have learned over the years. It obviously brings a lot of impact to a lot of people. And at the end of the day, it's all about getting the people the treatment that they need.
Absolutely. The great thing about working with DSOs is they already have operational structure in place. So it's a great opportunity. So you also have the trainers, the train the trainer aspect, which just makes that training all the more impactful. So, and particularly now in this post-COVID time, strong immune systems, we need to get those case acceptances up there.
Very true. Thank you so much, Janet. You have a great day, okay?
Thank you, Gary. My pleasure. All right.